A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
One of the great things about doing a podcast for some 8 years is that when you come by a new wonderful podcast, you can actually promote it on your platform. So without any further ado, I would like to implore you, dear listener, to go and to listen to the Being Berlin pod. It's produced by Mac Matan, who set off for Berlin in the August of 2020. What she does is interview Berliners. And whilst you might be saying to yourself, well, I'm sat in Boise, Idaho, or Christchurch, New Zealand, what does this have to do with me? Fundamentally, this is a story about humanity, about people finding themselves, finding their home, and connecting with others. It just so happens that it all happens within Berlin. So if you like human stories, I'm proud to be able to promote the Being Berlin podcast. Go and find it on a podcatcher of your choice today.
Each month, over 80,000 people download podcasts produced from the fevered mind of Royfield Brown. They cover a gamut of topics like maps, politics, American presidents, history, the Archers, Formula One, Jamaican culture, and Englishness. Go to wherever you get your podcast and type in Royfield Brown to discover a new favorite podcast today.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, Anna.
This is Dumpty Dum, sponsored by Managers.
It's Archers Fan and Ambridge Pony Club.
Buggy Squires.
And Buggy Squires. And we're going to sing Dumpty Dumpty
Dumpty Dum, Dumpty Dumpty Dum, Dumpty Dumpty Dada, Dumpty 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 Dum, Dumpty Daddy Da, Dumpty Diddy Dumpty Diddy Dumpty Diddy Da, Dumpty 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 Dum, Dumpty Diddy Da.
And that's and we're in Margate.
This week's Dumpty Dum is from Buggy Squires, Ambridge Pony Club and Archers Fan 2015. That's our Bernadette, Jen and Brian, who had a fabulous Dumpty Dum meetup in Margate last Sunday. So thank you for the Dumpty Dum there. And this Dumpty Dum, as it happens, is sponsored by Brian Holding, who donated to Dumpty Dum this week.
This is Dumpty Dum, the show about the rally darky drama that is centred on Ambridge in the heart of the Midlands. I'm the potential hunt sap, who is Royfield Brown, and today I'm joined by the creepy old woman,
who is Jacqueline Berto in Saint-Gwen in Brittany, France. So, on this episode, we'll hear from Witherspoon, Jonah Titchmarsh, Christopher of the Voice McKiddy, Rachel from Doncaster, Sarah from Hampshire, David Mullis, formerly Cycling Christine, Jenny, first-time caller in from North Virginia but sounding like she comes from Cheshire, Pip Robinson from Thornton Heath, our man Jonah Jazz, and Jen, Ambridge Pony Club.
Plus, folks, we have Tweet of the Week from our Purple Pumpkin, and we have a social media roundup from Stephen Bowden. Don't forget, folks, we've got loads of content over there on YouTube. Go to YouTube, type in Dum-de-dum, and you'll see great interviews we've conducted over there, as well as going on to YouTube. Don't forget, at the end of the show, you'll have the opportunity to hear a Facebook roundup, and we'll be welcoming new members to our Facebook group.
But do we need to talk about Kill Jill already, Royfield, or should we just follow the script?
I thought you said you had things to do after we recorded the show. I think we need to focus.
I can't help it.
I think we need to focus.
Sorry. So I'm focusing on Kill Jill, right? Right. Quentin Tarantino has nothing on what I'm thinking about Jill at this minute. Okay, first, let's look at the week in Ambridge from our Stephen Bowden.
What a week it's been in Ambridge. On Sunday, Leonard's plans to renovate the hen house, I'm thinking feature walls and Bronte novels on every perch, got caught up in explosive rows breaking out all over Brookfield. First, Jill said some undeniably harsh and blinkered things to Ben. Then Ruth let rip at David about what Jill had said to Ben. And then she threw restraint to the wind with a magnificent tirade at Jill, which could probably be heard halfway to Lower Loxley. Meanwhile, over at Lower Loxley, the teenage generation were doing what teenagers do best, mixing wild idealism with boiling hormones. Looking for ways to sabotage the Hunt ball without getting in the way of his maths initiative, Brad took a clue from an ancient map and came up with a cunning plan. This relied on him and Mia having low-key jobs. Or did he mean low-key jobs? As in Loki, the Norse god of mischief, get it? Oh, never mind. Suit yourselves. Julianne was back, dishing out birthday treats to Rory, but otherwise taking no interest in his personal life except when it affected her. Like when Rory was on the brink of landing an internship with none other than Penelope Sanford. Who? Never mind, whoever she was, Julianne didn't like the idea at all. Is it just me? Or is their relationship getting increasingly toxic? Luckily, the cake that Jennifer made for Rory was far from toxic. Do you see what I did there? And it allowed him to build bridges with Ben. Incidentally, it's good to know that Jennifer is alive and baking, but it does seem an age since we actually heard her voice. I do hope she's not trapped in the Willow Cottage kitchen. Having failed to cheer Ben up, Rory was almost tempted by a big night out with veterinary nurse Paul, featuring a Chinese buffet and karaoke at the Pearl Palace in Hollerton. Who knew that Hollerton had such bright lights? But they weren't so bright that we couldn't see a real spark between Rory and Paul. When Brad dropped some stuff from the shop off with Oliver at the food bank, it was hard not to spot the sharp contrast between tins of peaches and soup that were near to their sell-by dates and the elaborate dinner and chocolate fountain on offer at the Hunt Ball. And while the fact that some of the proceeds from the ball were going to the food bank was enough to make Brad momentarily worried about his cunning plan, I'm not sure it was really a way of bringing things back to life, as Oliver put it. Meanwhile, Freddie had bagged Flawed to play at the Hunt Ball. You know, Flawed. They had that big hit with that song. Or am I thinking about Pink Flawed? Either way, it was enough to persuade Paul that he should go to the ball with Rory. And the big day arrived. Brad and Mia made their statement about the unacceptability of hunting in 2022 using road signs. It was really quite effective, although it ended up costing Eddie a wing mirror and quite possibly oil stains on the pink velour trim in the back of his limo, and it left Oliver wanting to wring the neck of whoever was responsible. So much for bringing things back to life. But it was successful enough to leave Mia trying to decide what to sabotage next, as long as it's not Brad's future. Rory was all tuxed up, and according to Elizabeth, looking like James Bond. I'm thinking Pierce Brosnan era? Maybe in that smoking extravaganza, the gazebo is not enough? What? And then we went back to Brookfield, where Ruth was serving up chili with rice, or awkward silences, apparently, until Leonard turned up, allowing Ruth to let rip at him too, making him feel rather unwelcome. Still, Ruth managed to calm things down. Then David mentioned to Jill that they were selling 4 acres of land by Hollow Tree. This caused a whole new eruption, ending with Jill storming out, presumably dragging Leonard along in her wake. Will the hen house never be renovated?
So there we are.
There we go. Thank you, Mr. B.
Right.
I know you want to talk about Jill Archer.
No, but lots of other people do, so let's go on. We'll listen to the calls and I'll add my bits on afterwards.
All right, but it is customary for us right here and now to at least comment on the week in Ambridge just before we move on.
A good week for me, but how was it for you?
Awesome week. Tremendous. Pumped. 2 stunning episodes where, you know, Ruth let people have it with both barrels. Even poor Leonard was taken out by collateral damage. He just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, had his head taken off. Awesome week.
Great. We're in agreement then. So I think we need to listen to what the other people have to say.
Right then.
First.
A lot can happen in 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
We've got a bumper week of calls. First one, it's your Chris.
He's Christopher, and he's not in Aberdeen. He's much further south, so I'm guessing now Dundee. Go on, Christopher. We're going to get your address out of you in the end.
All right. Here we go.
Christopher, from the seaside, but not from Aberdeen, further south. My unpopular view is that in this whole long sort of drawn-out saga, I can't help but feel that Brad actually displayed the correct instincts in his slightly chivalric charging up to the bed and challenging him to a fight. I can't help but feel that the situation might have been better dealt with all round if there had been more violence and less talking. I think there would have been significantly less rancour and viciousness and huffing in the current situation that we have now. And I think actually if I'd been... I was very hostile towards Vince's behaviour in the pub and his singling out of Chelsea, his outing of Chelsea. However, in his position, I think I would have punched Ben, not for the pregnancy, but for his treatment of Beth, which I thought was appalling. I'm not a big fan of Beth, but I thought the way he treated her was appalling. He actually threw her out, and had it been my daughter, I would have punched Ben. And I think Vince would have felt better, and I think Ben might have felt better, and then we could have all moved on. And all this talking, and where has it got us? Nowhere. So I feel... Scriptwriters, I think more violence and less talking, and I think we can get through the other side of this storyline. But that may not be a modern view, but it's the one that I'm sticking to. Anyway, goodbye.
We love you too, Christopher.
I think I love him too also. However, I don't think we can condone violence.
No, not at all. In fact, I was about to say, I think we need to say, we love you, but less violence, please. Mm-hmm. Neither of us condone violence. But I understand where he's coming from.
And I'll tell you one thing which I did agree with him on, is he said, if he'd have punched Ben, Vince would have felt better. But also, Ben would have felt better, because Ben, I keep saying he's self-flagellating. Like, he wants to feel...
Yeah, but he doesn't need to self-flagellate. So.
He wants to feel that there is a physical cost, actually, to what he's done. Incredibly psychological in that regard. Christopher was spot on. You're Christopher, sorry. Because I can't claim him, can I? He's yours.
No, you can't. He's definitely mine. That voice is mine. Although I've got another Christopher in my life, so I can't really. But right, I'm guessing Dundee, Christopher. Let us know.
All right, then, smashing. Now, just before you talk about that voice, I've been told that I've got a nice voice too. Just saying.
You have got a nice voice, Royfield.
Why have you never told me that before? Why are you always so sparing with
your compliments?
Your head's
big enough anyway.
Gosh, all right. Like that, is it? Anyway... No, from your Christopher going to my Rachel in Doncaster. No.
Oof, nice.
Hello, Jacqueline Royfield and fellow Dumpty Dummers. Rachel from Doncaster here. I wanted to call in something in support of the Mia and Brad storyline because I imagine more people were very annoyed with it. I just found it really delightfully silly and I found it really fun. It took me back to the days when I was a teenage environmental activist and did some actions that were way more ridiculously, politically, strategically ineffectual than that was. But then having said that, what was the point of it? Hunting with dogs was banned in 2004. That was 18 years ago. And there has been maybe a little bit of a hint that they were still, that the hunt did do some illegal hunting, like back when Rob was slowly showing his true colours, and I think he punched a hunt saboteur in the face or something. And I can't really remember. Maybe you can remember. Was it clear if the hunt did illegally hunt animals? Because I know a lot of hunts do. I've always found it a bit difficult to imagine a hunt that sanctimonious Shuler's involved in doing anything illegal. But maybe they do. But what's weird is Mia and Brad weren't discussing that. They weren't like, oh, it's illegal and then it's still happening. They just didn't even mention it. So what do they think they're protesting about? It's almost as if they are protesting something that last happened 18 years ago. But, you know, it was enjoyable. I was all for it.
Mm. Well, good call, Rachel. And I agree. I'm very confused by all of this because it's been going on a long time, this anti-hunting, this no hunting. Mm.
Well, I think... they were protesting about hunting per se, weren't they? Right, but you know what? The nuance could well be lost on my little towny sensibilities. All I know is that when they were describing those photographs with, you know, little children being blooded and having, you know, the fox's blood smeared on
Horrible.
Their face, I'm right behind them in that regard. But whether the Ambridge Hunt is doing that in 2022, I don't know. But I just find it somewhat peculiar that posh, entitled, well-off people dress up and career all over the countryside, full stop. But there's going to be many people listening to this podcast who are going to say it's traditional and maybe they aren't actually hunting foxes anymore. It's just the scent or something or another. I don't know.
I think it's a very hidden area. We don't know unless you're part of a hunt. Mm. And I'm not. But here in France, of course, we have the La Chasse. Mm-hmm. And they go out regularly and shoot, and then they have a meal using all the meat that they've taken in the year, in the hunting year, to celebrate. And you go along, you pay a meal, and you eat a little wild boar or a little Bambi or them. I can't even talk about it.
Mm.
But it's a different attitude. Silly. Everybody who goes to the hunt ball at Lower Loxley knows where Lower Loxley is.
Mm. Yeah. But it wasn't just that, though, because they said it was diverted for flooding. So you follow the signs. Anyway, wonderful call. My Rachel. If you're having Christopher, I'm having Rachel. And now it's time for Sarah.
Hi, I'm Sarah from Hampshire. I'm probably a Kira in terms of when I started listening to The Archers. Firstly, I just have to say I absolutely love Royfield and Jacqueline. You're a great pair, and I love listening to all the caller-inners. First time caller-inning, and I just wanted to say that how shocked I was about Jill's reaction to Ben, and I just couldn't believe how awful she was. It's obviously a really difficult thing that he went through, and even if he could fight for the baby, it's not his decision. At the end of the day, it's Chelsea's. I'm so pleased that Ruth stood up for him, which was a bit of a shock, and actually really disappointed that David doesn't appear to have a backbone to stand up to his mum. Ruth's very right. Just because you think something doesn't mean you should say it, and it wasn't helping anyone. Anyway, hope everyone has a fantastic week, and keep up the good work, everybody.
Can I just say that Sarah is now my new favourite listener?
I can tell. I can tell. You were smiling all the way through listening to that. But I completely and utterly agree with everything she said.
What? That we're a good couple? Think, is that what you're agreeing with?
Well, we are. We are. Well, of course, I agree with that. But just because you think something you shouldn't doesn't mean you have to say it. Perfect premise for the rest of your life, that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's a key part of socialization, isn't it?
Yeah.
We can actually curb our impulses, and we know that sometimes they're not going to be appropriate. What we're going to say and think can be two different things. We can still be true to ourselves, but also be mindful of our initial thoughts and curb those instincts.
Indeed. There was a brilliant play on Radio 4 Drama this week that was all about an autistic boy who had the urge to have sex.
Ooh.
And it was about a court case. It wasn't big, it was on Radio 4, but, and it was about the court case that followed about him and his urge to have sex and whether he should be curtailed. And that is a perfect example, I thought, of just because you think something or want something doesn't necessarily mean you should have something or say something.
But you know what, though? I want £1 million and I deserve £1 million.
Of course you do.
Okay, just checking that was actually right and proper. Right now, so was that, so you enjoyed the play, did you? I can't remember the last time I actually heard a play on Radio 4. I actually avoid them, if I'm being honest with you.
Really? Oh, I listen to them all the time. I spend a lot of time by myself, and then my BBC Sounds, I hated it to begin with, and I love it now. I suppose it's a bit like Twitter. I hated it to begin with, and I enjoy it now.
What? You've enjoyed Twitter in the last 2 weeks? Controversial.
It hasn't changed for me. Nothing has changed for me, because I only ever use the hashtag the Archers, apart from my one friend here in France who's on Twitter.
If you were to withdraw from Twitter, would you not be striking a blow for those who believe that with free speech comes responsibility, and we can't have total ubiquitous free speech because that promotes hate speech, and there's got to be consequences for people that break those rules of civility or norms?
Yeah, and it worries me because I'm so unable to cope with in this modern world with social medias. I've just got used to Twitter, so I need somebody to guide me in how to go about connecting with our lovely The Archers Dum-de-Dum community. So if anybody out there can help me, please tell me, please tell us. Wifeld, you're probably on the ball because you're such a young, connected person.
I'm only about 10 years younger than you. I'm not that young, 53.
Exactly 10 years.
I've tapped out of Twitter, really. You know, I'm on there, but I'm not. I don't advertise the fact that I'm on Twitter. But anyway, moving swiftly on, it says two calls then. The best and the easiest way for you to record a message or a plot prediction is to go to speakpipe.com/dumdydum. And don't forget the T in the middle. You can also find a link in the show notes.
Please, we need your calls by 6 p.m. on a Sunday UK time. Please keep your call to a maximum of 2 minutes and bear in mind that you need to be at least 18 to take part. We recorded a bit earlier today, but we still got a few calls in.
We did. This is the People's Podcast, the podcast put together by the people who love all things Ambridge. So if you're one of those people, and you are because you listen to the podcast, there are a few things that you can do. First off, if you haven't done so already, hit the subscribe button on whatever podcatcher you're listening to us on and give us a 5-star review. It'll be hugely appreciated. And finally, the third thing, is that you can consider becoming a Patreon. Patreon is a way of tipping creators, and there are different levels with different rewards. So if you just go to patreon.com, search for Dum-de-Dum, we would be chuffed to bits to have your support. Just like our buggy squires, Brian Holding, has done last week to become a sponsor of the show. Now, before we go back to our calls, if you would like to send us an electronic missive, go onto WhatsApp It's +447 957 167 696, +447 957 167 696, and we would love to get your message and we'll read it out. And we did get one via that very same medium this week. Now back to our caller-inners. Now it's time for Jonah Man Jazz.
Hi, this is Jonah Man Jazz calling from Newcastle. I've got a couple of points to make this week. First one regarding Brad, Mia and the hump ball. I think the way they did that story was quite good. There was quite realistic. Well, you know, realistic to some extent. Brad and Mia managed to cause some disruption. Brad sort of managed to half get involved without really committing to it and without really risking getting in too much trouble. I'm really appreciating the storyline with Brad because I'm kind of getting the impression he's torn between two different lives, the sort of establishment country life straight down the middle, like Oliver Sterling route, and sort of seeing, well, Oliver Sterling, he's got loads of money, he's really into the country pursuits, country establishment, and he could sort of be set for life. But then also on the other side, he's got Mia, who is from the country and is presenting a different way of being, not being in the mainstream, but in some ways it might be less comfortable. But I think he's persuaded by her arguments and he likes her, and that's going to be interesting. Second point is regarding the Brookfield situation. I think Royfield's always said that Brookfield's steady and boring, but the centre of the show, so not anymore. And where I think this story is heading is potentially a dementia storyline for Jill. The way she's not necessarily seeming to understand the current dynamic, she's harking back to the past. Those are certainly symptoms of a certain sort of dementia. It may have seemed to have come on a bit quickly, but we haven't heard a lot of her, and she's been with Leonard a lot. And Leonard doesn't know her that well, so he might not necessarily pick up on the differences, on the changes, subtle changes, until it suddenly sort of all kicked off. And I was thinking, well, they did the storyline, dementia storyline with Jack, but then he was just sort of a peripheral character, really. And this is really how they're going to do a proper dementia storyline with someone we've known for decades. It strikes me as sort of quite a good idea and quite a high for the actor to go out on. Speak to you soon.
Yeah, good call.
I agree with Jonah. I'm really enjoying the Archers at the moment. Though I will freely admit I didn't equate Jill's outburst with potentially with dementia, but he's not the only person to say this, so he is in good company.
No, he isn't. He is in very good company. I didn't either, but maybe we're just a bit dim, Royfield. We're focused on other things.
The only thing that I would actually take Jonah to task with is to say that Jack was a peripheral character. He became one during the dementia storyline, but actually he was at the heart of the village, yeah, etc. He was the Vince Casey before Vince Casey. He was the successful businessman, etc. So he wasn't always peripheral.
Yeah, I agree. And those of us who were really absolutely at the heart of the Archers in the 70s and 80s, I mean, Jack and Captain the dog were absolutely there. They really were the heart of the Archers storyline.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Mm. But most definitely when he developed Alzheimer's then, yeah, he became a peripheral character. There is no doubt. But Jonah, I hope that you're wrong about a dementia storyline for Jill. Though, as many people have said before, if you have so many elderly people in the village, age-related conditions should be an ever-present. And actually, they're not, you know, so...
Sorry, Royfield, I've got to stop. What are you doing here? I've got a daughter.
Hello.
Hey. Hello. How are you?
What are you doing here?
Came to eat. I'm hungry.
A 150-kilometre detour,
yeah,
to eat.
And to get my book, because I've finished my book and I'm feeling lonely, you know.
All right.
I'll go and get my book. And yeah. I think your headphones are the wrong way around again.
Sorry, Royfield.
Right.
So where were we? That's a surprise. So we were talking about, Jonas Core.
Yeah, age-related conditions. And with so many elderly people, you know, everybody's fit, hearty and hale, aren't they? And that shouldn't quite be the case. You know, there should be, everyone should have about two or three different ailments they're dealing with and moaning about. You know, that would be life. But whether complaining about your back or some other ailment makes a good drama, I don't really know. Right, now, so that's Jonah. We talked about old people, dementia storylines, old people's ailments. Do we have them in the Archers? The answer is no. Should we have them? Yes. Does it make for good drama? Probably not. But who knows where they're going with this Jill storyline. Jill does have form in being pro-life. She does have form. However,
she has form in being a bitch.
Oh.
Harsh. I know you're going to say harsh.
I didn't use the word harsh. Instead of using the word harsh, maybe I'll say scathing. That was scathing. Anyway, Ambridge Pony Club's up next.
Greetings, Royfield and Jacqueline. Jen calling in here. First of all, just to say how much I enjoyed my meetup with Archer's Queen, Bernadette, and Brian in Margate. Buggy Squires and Bernadette Hawks are exactly as lovely as you'd expect them to be. We had a thoroughly nice time, and I highly recommend everybody getting on that there tractor, finding your local dum-de-dummers and meeting up for a bit of a chat. Lovely thing to do. And on that, can you guys get a date in the diary for the next big dum-de-dum live? Because those of us who don't get much time off and have to come from overseas, we need a date, and it needs to be done. It's time we all got together again. Loving the storyline with Jill. I always had her down as a nasty old bat. I mean, she does this very public performance of being everybody's favourite fluffy granny, but she's never been that nice underneath. She can be absolutely vile to Kenton, maybe provoked, but she's certainly had her moments. And I think the closest to truth we ever got with Jill and Jill's character was when she was sitting in that church and admitted to Peggy that how much she was still jealous of Grace and how much she would love to throw her handbag through the Grace Archer Memorial window. I loved that moment because it just showed her truth. And then we had another flash of it again this week with her saying, going nuts about 4 acres and, you can just sell the whole lot for all I care, and manipulating David, who's still basically joined at the hip. So, yeah, it's nice to see her true colours coming out. Hopefully she's not just off to Felpisham. Hopefully her and Leonard will manage... Well, hopefully she will manage to go off to the south of France or somewhere more interesting, but let's get rid of Jill and just keep Leonard. He's lovely.
Very good, Jen. Very good. I'm sorry about the child that was being murdered in the background. All right, Royfield, let's talk about a date for a Dumpty Dum meetup.
Well, I was actually just looking at my emails from Cara from the Academic Archers, and there are a couple of dates. Okay, good people. It looks like it's either going to be the 21st of April. So, good people, what we have is either a toss-up between the weekend starting Friday the 21st of April, which obviously is then Saturday 22nd and then Sunday the 23rd, or the week after, which is the 28th, which is the Friday, 29th is Saturday, and the 30th, which is the Sunday. So those are the two possible weekends that this is going to be. What this will be a mashup between the Academic Archers doing their conference and us getting together, having a dum-de-dum meetup with some actors and doing a live show. So it's either Friday the 21st through to Sunday the 23rd or Friday the 28th through to the 30th. Now, that doesn't mean it's necessarily going to start on the Friday, but those are the dates which we have blocked off so far. I will be speaking to Cara ASAP, and we will decide on which one of those it actually is. But if you can make space in your busy diary, Madame Berto, or you, good listener, listen to this whilst you go out on your run, wash your dishes, or however you listen to this podcast, then we'll not be disappointed.
Well, that's good. That narrows it down a bit. So the last two weekends in... A bit. Yeah, because it's not specific, is it?
Wait a minute, there's 52...
That's 2 weeks, but...
But wait a minute, there's 52...
I can't block off. I've just thought... But maybe I just come to the UK for 2 weeks and it covers both.
I don't know what the heck you're moaning about.
Not many other people can afford to do that either.
And then you could maybe sort out an address for your bank account as well.
Oh, God, that is a ridiculous thing. Nobody wants me. Thank you so much for everybody who's sent me. I've had so many messages from you, from Theo, from lots of other people, dum-de-dum people. But, in fact, my basic problem is I don't have a UK address. So at the moment, my half-dead parents, I'm trying to persuade them to let me use their address. Hey-ho.
Well, I'll come back to that. So from Ambridge Pony Club, we go to Pip.
Hello, Royfield and Jacqueline and all other Dumpty Dummers. It's Pip here from Thornton Heath. Second time caller in a row. Very much an addict now of Dumpty Dum, so thank you, everyone. Yeah, I've got a rare day off in the middle of the week, so I just caught up with all of this week's Archers, and I just listened to last night's episode, which was Ruth giving one hell of a fire-breathing performance to Jill, which I just thought was absolutely fantastic. I feel like Ruth, she's one of these characters that I kind of love to hate because she's just so unbelievably beige all the time. She's always trying to appease everyone. She's trying to find the middle ground. She's just trying to, ooh, softly, softly, David. Ooh, like, you know, and it's just, ugh. But having her fight so fiercely for her son and finally let rip at Jill for what feels like all the things she's wanted to say, all the times she's bit her tongue and trying to be diplomatic, it just finally all came to a head and she just let rip. And I just thought it was fantastic. So a comment on that. And also, you know, I know that we had to have inevitably some sort of run in between the sort of, I would say maybe the older generation of Ambridge who are still quite C of E and, sorry, Church of England and, you know, really maybe a traditionalist view on the options available to people when they obviously fall pregnant when they weren't planning to. So it was good to have that point of view, but I thought it was absolutely completely unacceptable for Jill to say that when she said it. So I'm glad Ruth let rip. Thanks so much, everybody. Bye.
Yep.
It was awesome, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was awesome. It was a laugh out loud, hooray, hooray, hooray moment when Ruth let rip.
It was 40 years worth of frustration, wasn't it? And just, yeah.
If you've ever had a mother-in-law, you know what that feels like.
The other thing is as well that it really does highlight David and his supineness. Is that the wrong word?
Don't know whether that's a good word or a bad word, Royfield, but that sounds about right.
What Jill said to Ben, regardless of the rights and wherefores, was bang out of order, especially when you know the boy's a bit fragile. Again, this is the reason why we love this thing, because it was just great character-driven drama. Jill does have form. She does believe that life starts at conception. Here you have Ben, who is going through the mire. He's putting himself through it that has caused this hurt. Then you have Ruth, who's been for the best part of 40 years, has wanted to tell Jill a few home truths. And then you have David, caught, you know, like a rabbit in the headlights.
Yeah, but he asked for it, David. God, he was really ridiculous. He is a ridiculous in that he won't support his own family because his mum's there.
Well, it feels like he's got divided loyalties. And the fact of the matter is, you're married to Ruth. Your mother's your mother, yes, but you're married to Ruth and you have
for
children.
Life.
And you have children with her. So that's the side you have to take. You know, after the argument, then if you turn round to your partner and say, I thought you went a little over the top. That's what you do. But there and then, there's only one side to be on. But
absolutely. What about the cooking of the chili, though? Do you think that was a rapprochement between Ruth was trying to be nice to David by cooking a chili, just like Susan does?
Well, I don't know if bit of chulo means the same in the Brookfield residence as it does for Neil and Susan. But I just thought even that was just brilliant. You know, the afters, so to speak. Everybody's had a few days to cogitate and to think about it, but still passions are still raw, so to speak.
Indeed. But at the start of that scene, Ruth, she tried to talk gently to Leonard about it. Yeah. And isn't Leonard a lovely man?
He is.
Even the hens like him.
What he is he's trying to be Kofi Annan, isn't he? Boutros.
Well, he is
guy.
Kofi Annan, yeah, isn't he?
But like, Kofi Annan didn't get, you know, his head taken off. You know, yeah, no, you know,
that's
poor,
true.
Poor Leonard. And I did appreciate, David says, you know, this ain't Leonard's fault. Leonard's just trying to, you know, be a peacemaker here. And then, yeah, and it was a great bit of acting when Ruth goes back to Leonard and says, I'm really sorry and blah, blah, blah. You could really hear it in her voice. You know, she said, I did overstep the mark. And then we didn't expect that little grenade to go off at the end, you know, Jill's saying, oh, this is kind of nonsense. And he's selling the farm. And you know what? I'm leaving. Where's she going?
Yeah, but where's she going?
Exactly. Where's she going? Yeah. So, Pip, thank you for that call. Now it's time for David.
Hi, Roy Field and Jacqueline and all Dumpty Dummers. It's David Mullis here. Thank you for the Daves on Twitter. Calling you from a very cold and rainy, wet Leicestershire, where unfortunately I'm currently having to look after my mother, who's been recently diagnosed with dementia, whilst my dad's recovering from a broken leg in hospital. So all hands to the pump here and family coming first, which in some ways is quite the opposite of the way things have gone at Brookfield in the Archers family. Just some comments. Last week I called in and I mentioned that I had a lot of decisions and found it very hard to make the right decision and feel that my mental health wasn't in any jeopardy when we were discussing my now wife's first pregnancy with our near 19-year-old son, as he is now. And indeed, when I thought about some of the awful, really awful things that Jill had said, it did remind me of some circumstances in which my own mother, even at that point, had said that, are you sure the baby's yours? When she'd found out that 2 weeks after we got engaged, we were actually expecting. These things really do cut deep. And though I had the support of my now wife, it was an absolutely awful thing that anyone's ever said. You know, I fell in love very quickly, you know, not dissimilarly to our good friend, Mr. Hancock, that's appearing on ITV currently. But we were engaged within 8 weeks after we'd met. And when you click and find the right person, you do. And then finding out 2 weeks later that we were expecting, once we'd made the decision and come to terms with what we were going to do, we went hell for leather for it. It didn't change anything we wanted to do. Largely with our lives, what we've been able to do in that respect is just do everything we've wanted to, but just not necessarily in the right order. So I do sympathise and empathise tremendously with Ben and with Ruth. And I was delighted that Ruth gave Jill a good talking to. And hopefully there'll be a positive resolution and Ben will get the assistance that he actually needs. Take care, everyone.
What comes around, comes around. What happens? That is so... But to think that he's there caring for his mum who's diagnosed with dementia and his mum made a comment 20 years ago that could have cut, well, obviously did cut him to the quick. Yeah, and that, I know that's real life. And those are the things that we like that come into the Archers as well. You know, things do react over the years. But David, thank you so much for sharing that with us. You know, it's impressive. You know,
yeah.
I'm very touched by your call.
Yeah, because of honesty and vulnerability in your family stories. And it just shows us how this drama does mirror what people have actually experienced in real life, which makes it even more realistic and poignant for us on an individual basis. David, please continue to call in. I love your insights and your asides. Now we're going to go to Jenny.
Hi, I'm a first-time caller innerer. I'm calling in from Northern Virginia. I grew up listening to The Archers with my mum in rural Cheshire. I feel like The Archers has been around me my whole life. I think my mum actually named myself and my sister after characters. My name's Jennifer, my sister is Elizabeth, and that's kind of been continued because my husband is a Justin and I named my daughter Emma. I actually listen to The Archers with my daughter now. She's only 8 and it generally sends her to sleep. Anyway, some really interesting plot lines recently in The Archers. Obviously, here in America, abortion has been in the headlines an awful lot recently. And The Archers has really shed light on all the complexities of the issue. But yeah, I wanted to talk about how, just a tiny thing, I really liked Ben talking to Bess, his dog. And I think in crazy times, our animals and pets can bring a lot of support, and hoping that Ben can help ground himself again. In a totally different train of thought, would love it if they ever introduced an American character. It could be a lot of fun. I'm not sure if they've done this before.
maybe a distant cousin or a friend. I don't know, but I really enjoy listening to the podcast as well. There's not many people I can chat to about farming docudramas here in Northern Virginia. So it's just really lovely to get your weekly podcast. I listen to it when I'm walking my dog round the neighborhood trails here. Anyway, I'll wrap it up. Keep up all the good work and lots of love from across the ocean.
Thank you for that. First time caller in era.
Welcome, Jenny. Mm-hmm.
Welcome to the bosom of the family. Question, Americans on the Archers. Was it Cameron Fraser? Who was the...
Cameron Fraser, yeah.
He was the person who knocked up Lizzie.
Yeah. And she had an abortion.
But he was... Was he Canadian or American?
Well, I have an idea that he was Canadian.
I think he was Canadian too.
Bad research, Royfield.
Well, it was no research.
We've been criticised for this before.
No research. Just trying to remember.
When I heard Jenny's call yesterday, I did think I must look that up, but I never have. But what about the lady who was friends many, many, this might be before your time. There was a lady who had a house in Ambridge who was great friends with the dog lady, Laura, with, I think her name was Laura.
Huh? Dog lady's Marjorie Antrobus, that's all I've got.
But there was another lady around the same sort of time, or maybe a few years before, who was called Laura, with Colonel somebody or other.
Danby. And isn't it Colonel Danby?
I don't know, but she had an American, a North American accent, but I couldn't say it's Canadian or American. But yes, I think somebody needs to sweep in. What about some owner of Great Gables being an American?
That'd be good. And as I'm furiously looking at my phone here to see where Cameron Fraser was actually from, I got a feeling he's actually Canadian. But it was Colonel Freddie Danby.
Didn't he have Laura?
Yes, Laura Archer. Lodged with Laura Archer at Ambridge Hall. He was a widower.
Pre-Susan.
Well, this is pre-me.
Robert and... Well, it's pre-Robertson and Linda at Ambridge Hall, yeah.
Well, and Laura. That's totally pre-me because Colonel Danby, I know the name, but I do not know the character. So this is what, early 80s, late 70s?
Late 70s, I would have said.
Oh, here we go.
Definitely around when I first started listening regularly.
Cameron Fraser. But it doesn't actually say where he's from. Cameron Fraser came to Ambridge in 1990 when he bought the Barrow Estate from Lillian Bellamy. He became quite the local villain during his relatively brief tenure. Mike Tucker lost a night in an accident. Carolyn Bone, later Sterling, and Marjorie Antrobus were swindled out of a sizable portion of their savings. And a pregnant Elizabeth Archer was abandoned at a motorway service station as he fled overseas to escape arrest. He had also attempted to rape Shula. Good heavens.
Good gracious, no idea.
Well, if that's the type of North American we have over here in Britain,
yeah, we don't want them, any more. But it's a good idea, Jenny. Good idea, Jenny. Well, maybe we should have your Justin on.
It's a good idea in theory, but the practice has not worked out in Ambridge.
Maybe we need a nice American. You must know some nice Americans, Royfield, in California.
Are any of them nice? Are they, though? You know, Witherspoon.
You're calling from California there. Mm. Oh, yeah, that Witherspoon. We like him.
Do we? I've got my eye on him, I tell you. But anyway, talking about Witherspoon, guess who's next?
Good link.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Toss salads and scrambled eggs. Mercy.
Greetings, Royfield, Jacqueline, and all Dumpty Dumbers around the world. It's Witherspoon and Angus Haggis here. Originally, I wanted to talk a bit about Brad, the quality of his relationships with others, and the mentee-mentor relationship with Oliver, which may very well be in danger. It's pretty obvious Oliver will find out what Brad and Mia did. I predict Oliver's first reaction will be to withdraw his financial support of Brad, and that's when it will get messy. I'm hoping that all will be well that ends well. We'll see. Now on to Jill. I'm sure that's what most caller-inners will be talking about today. Her changes in personality and her emotional outbursts lead me to clinical speculation, of course. Many will imagine she has dementia, but what type? Alzheimer's disease is the most common cause of the symptoms of dementia, but there are others. Remember, dementia includes both cognitive changes and psychological changes in a person. I think Jill, age 91, has frontotemporal dementia. This dementia, as the name indicates, affects the frontal and temporal lobes of the brain, the areas generally associated with personality and behavior. Dramatic personality changes, inappropriate and impulsive behaviors, impaired judgment, and lack of empathy, sound like Jill, are followed by apathy and withdrawal. Very sad indeed. Well, that's my hunch. Talk to you soon.
Gosh.
Nothing like a professional point of view.
Well done for that, Mr. Spoon. And yes, great. This Jill Archer could well be suffering from that form of dementia. Only time will tell. Go on.
Sorry. Isn't her voice a bit weak, though? But don't you think her voice has been very waffly?
Well, no, she most definitely, her voice is weak. And the first time I heard her again, this was some months ago, she was obviously suffering with something, whether it was, you know, a terrible bout of
a
cold or flu, because it literally didn't even sound like her. Now it sounds like her. Mm. But, you know, I don't know how old Paddy, the actor who plays Jill, is, but, you know, she's not getting
her 90s.
She's not getting any younger, which is, and you really, and which is another marvel about June Spencer, that she's kept her, you know, the strength in her voice.
So strong. Yeah. And in fact, I'm quite interested in how this Jill storyline is going to work out, because she has been known to be nasty. I recognise that she's been nasty and I don't like her for it. Strong-willed. Okay. She's got a viewpoint. Well, who hasn't? But maybe she doesn't want to go out as a, in a whimper. And I read something about this week. Maybe it's the actor, her, that said, right, I want to go out being antsy, aggressive and nasty, rather than being Jill, always there supporting the family, cooking flapjacks or throwing flapjacks. But maybe that's what it's all about. And if that's the way the actor wants to go, good for her.
You know, that's utterly a fair point, and I hadn't thought about that. That the actor who played Jack Woolley, whose name I just forget.
Escapes me,
But he was suffering from dementia.
In real life, yeah.
So that was incredibly poignant. And then Peggy, the character of Peggy played by June Spencer, her husband had died from dementia. So I believe, I could be wrong with this, but I believe she was a big advocate for the story in the planning stage because it meant something to her. And I suppose, yes, if you are 91, there aren't too many big storylines left, really, if we've been brutal about it. And this could be a way of signing off very poignantly for the character, for us, the listeners as well. She's been in it since, what, the 50s? The late 50s?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And we know her as a mixed character, really. You know, she's always had this bitterness about Grace, blah, blah, blah. And the rest of it. But I think we're seeing the beginning of the end of Jill.
Goodness. Said like that, you're going to make me
let's cry.
Well up. Anyway, right, I need to be rescued. Maybe Clint, formerly Cycling Christine, will do that.
Hello, Roy Field, Jacqueline, and all fellow Dumpty Dummers. This is formerly Cycling Christine here. This is Wednesday, so early in the week. And I just wanted to call it about Monday's fantastic episode. I have to say, recently, I have been getting so fed up with some of the awful episodes, clunky storylines, driven me to distraction at times. And I have thought at times, do I really want to continue listening to drivel like this? And then suddenly, out of the blue, we get Monday's episode with the magnificence of Ruth's rant at Jill. And you could feel the, I don't know, 35, 40 years of pent-up frustration of having to bite her tongue for so many years, everything all coming out, and it just felt so raw, so real, and was absolutely brilliant. And I suddenly thought, yes, that's why I listened to it and why I've listened for so long, because you get something that feels real and it unfolds in real time. And just absolutely wonderful episode. Don't know how it's going to resolve, but I could just feel myself in Ruth's shoes over, as you can sometimes, and thinking, yeah, whatever you have thought of Ruth at times, this was perfect, spot on, and the writing and the acting perfect too. So greetings to you all. Thank you very much. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Perfectly agree. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye, Christine. Great. As we said earlier on, same theme. Good acting.
Good acting. Tremendous acting. And also, just that wonderful payoff. If you have been a listener of some vintage, I can't quite say as I agree that Jill is, what do you call her? Bitchy? I can't remember exactly the word he used, but...
A cow?
Historically, she hasn't been. However, she has been...
Historically, she's been horrible. She was horrible when Lizzie had an abortion. She was horrible when the Fairbrothers, irrationally horrible because their name was Fairbrother. She's
always had a thing against the Fairbrother family. That there is no doubt.
And she's a matriarch. And what matriarch, well, I'm just going to the other side now.
You're a matriarch, don't you? So before...
I am indeed.
You knock women of a certain stature, right? I'm just pointing out that you, as a mother... and of a grandmother, and of somebody who's standing in your village, you are also a matriarch. But anyway, now I've said that, please continue.
Well, Royfield, as I said at the beginning of the show, you introduced me as the creepy older woman. Well, To be fair,
I read out what you wrote on the script.
That's true. I'm not a creepy older woman, but I'm a woman that knows her own mind. I won't be bombasted into being, or whatever the expression is, into being told that I'm not, I don't know my own mind. Jill is just like me. So I say no more.
Right. Okay. Now we get into the truth of the matter. So when you see Jill, you see a reflection of yourself.
She's a woman of her time. Mm-hmm. She's a woman of her time.
Now you're trying to slightly wriggle out of... the situation you put yourself in. Well,
it's a mix, isn't it? It's a mix.
Right, got it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just
right, have we done all the core
winners? I believe
now?
We have.
So this week we had one email.
Yes.
Which slaps Royfield on the wrists.
Mm-hmm. Proper. It says, "Hi, Royfield, please, in caps, stop saying that Chelsea is only 17. She had her 18th birthday in September at the same time as Alistair's 60th. There was talk of them sharing a party as Tracy couldn't afford one for Chelsea. In the end, it never happened for either of them as that was when Chelsea ran away. She's definitely 18, not 17, from Debbie. Debbie, I stand corrected, but I think my fundamental point still really stands that prior to Chelsea having the termination, I would say that she's a pretty immature 18-year-old emotionally, and then also with her just dithering on that decision, because this is a life-altering decision for the mother. However, she's displayed great maturity since, saying that this thing will not define it has happened, and as I said last week, also dealing with the gossip in the village. But I still think my point still fundamentally stands. But yes, I completely forgot she's 18. She was going to potentially have a birthday with Alistair. My wrists are slapped. Listen, there you go. So that is an email errorer, or at least a messenger errorer. If you'd like to join Debbie by sending us a message, go onto WhatsApp, and it's +447 957 167 696, and you can send us a free message from anywhere on planet Earth. So again, it's +447 957 167 696, and we'll read that out on a further show. Now we've done email errors or messenger errors, it's time for Facebook to see what our Facebook party have been talking about on, guess what, Facebook.
Brookfield is still suffering the after effects of the termination. And that is what most of the discussion has been about this week. After the argument between Ruth and Jill, I posted that I was with Ruth. Witherspoon noted that David is still tied to his mother's apron strings. Emma Louise Woodhouse commented that decades of tongue-biting were spilling out there. T. Brown Artivist CA was glad to see Ruth finally get a backbone. That was a very popular episode. And Royfield thought the round of applause was needed for all concerned. David Gregg thought it was great to hear Ruth stand up to the Clan Omerta. Jan Mitchell said that it's so empowering when you hear someone speaking truth to power like that. Margaret Yu thought it was like high noon with flapjacks. Paul Eggers said that, for once, I'm 100% behind Ruth. And David needs to grow a few vertebrae, along with some cojones. David has been described as a wimp and a drip. Karen Bamford is a fan of Ruth and is glad she's back in other people's good books. Justine Summers thought that it could be an uncomfortable Christmas at Brookfield. Well, that was before Jill announced that she was going to leave. Caroline Wright said, "Oh, it's Jexit." Richard Woodfield would miss her lemon drizzle cake. Cottier Howard wondered what would happen to Stir Up Sunday. And Marianne Perk thought that Jill had stirred up enough already. Someone listeners wondered if Jill was developing dementia. Paul Duke thought that it would explain the change of character and lack of empathy with Ben. Ruth cooked a chili for dinner. Listeners like Ruth Pearl and Joanne Smith couldn't help referring to Susan and Neil and their special occasions. John Mitchell shared a link where Patricia Green hinted that she would like to retire. Amanda Whiteley is married to a farmer and has discussed the plan to sell off a piece of Brookfield land. She said that he would not sell land, but would take out a loan. And onto the Hunt Ball storyline. Suzanne Steele wondered why a lad such as Brad would forfeit his future for such stupidity, and she doesn't believe that he would sabotage himself. Storyline makes her mad. Jan Mitchell thinks that it's because Brad fancies Mia. Well, I think we all agree on that. Witherspoon thinks that Brad's tendency is to be a people pleaser. It took a lot of stuff going on to stand up to George. Well, that's all from me for now.
Thank you for that, and everybody else who has posted their thoughts on the Dumpty Dump Facebook group.
Now, this week we have three lovely new members, and we welcome them to the group. We have Sean Brown,
Lulu,
and Lena Bortner. So, Ryfield, have we had any reviews this week?
We don't have any ugly ones, any bad ones. We do have a good one, and it says, "Better than Ambridge. I've been listening to this podcast for nearly a year and look forward to the weekly episode. Always thoughtfully written, write anything on this podcast, and presented."
We kind of do. We kind of do, Rofield, but not really. It's fluid.
Yeah. I think there are markers in the sand, Penny, which we put, and then we just riff from there. But thank you for saying it's always thoughtfully written and presented, and that it never lets you down. Lovely review. And she gave us 5 stars, and she posted that to Apple Podcasts in the United States, and that's Penny Pemkins, which is a lovely surname. Never heard of Pemkins before.
It is a lovely surname, and she's in the US of
it. Yes, absolutely. So,
Ryfield, I know we've already talked about it a bit, but do we need to talk about Twitter and the at Archers Twitter long?
Yes, we do. We are on Twitter for the time being anyway. Let's see how this mass exodus, if it actually pans out. So if you are on Twitter, we are on Twitter under at DumDeeDum. We always include the hashtag The Archers, the capital T and a capital A, so the visually impaired can enjoy any Archers-based tweets. Also, that hashtag is your opening for the tweet along, both in the evenings and during the omnibus. Please try and include at DumDeeDum in your tweet so more people get to see, which helps keep our community growing. As well as at DumDeeDum on Twitter, Madame Berta, I believe you're also on that platform.
I am, and I do tweet a lot about the Archers, but about other stuff as well. And I am at Jberto Sanguin.
Talking about Twitter, must be time for Tweet of the Week.
Hello, Royfield, Jacqueline, and Dumpty Dummers everywhere. It's Purple Pumpkin here with a selection of Tweets of the Week. Twitter is feeling like a very uncertain place right now, so a big thank you to those of the Archers tweet alongers who are hanging in there and sharing the fun. For those who've moved over to Mastodon, where tweets are called toots, LomaLindy12 at LomaLindy12 points out that if you join the Archers hashtag on Mastodon, you'd be joining a Mastodon ding-a-ling-a-ding-dong. I hope I don't have to say that every week going forwards. I also want to give a big thank you to my posse who send me suggestions for Tweet of the Week. I think you'll spot some of yours this week. One of this week's candidates even nominated themselves. Please do keep them coming. My thread of the week, for those who don't look at Twitter, was started by Camilla Pargeta. You remember her, Nigel's sister. She told us all about a dream she had about hashtag The Archer's Twitterati interviewing aspiring scriptwriters. We questioned them closely about family connections, number of bedrooms, who are the silents like the Gills, present issues facing farmers, and we were draconian in dismissing the lightweights. We then told the successful scripties that their first scriptwriting conference would be with us over lunch at the Ivy. A number of volunteers joined Camilla's thread and offered to help with the interviewing and the lunch. Meanwhile, for those who've been more focused on the Hunt Ball and its saboteurs, or shouting at Jill and David this week, here are the medals. In bronze position, it's Pipsqueak at Pipsqueed 27895514. I thought the Hollow Tree strip was a lady's downstairs haircut. In silver, it's Worst Character of the Week at WCOW Archers. Many of the Archers listeners are alone and confused after finding out that they agree with Ruth for the last few days. If you can help, please do send money, food, or whatever will help them find their way to somewhere safe where they can recover. And in gold, it's Fintan T. at Fintan the Wrong. If Ben ever does have kids, he should call every one of them Grace. That's it for this week. Hope to see you all on Twitter next week.
Thank you, Theo. Thank you, Purple Pumpkin. And well done. Don't forget, we're also on Instagram, where you can find us. We're at Dumpty Dum. So please do follow us there, and you'll be in the capable hands of our Katie.
And thanks as ever to all our contributors and to our social media supremos, Shambridge for her voices, and to our lovely podcasting godmother, Lucy B. Freeman.
There you go, good people. There's been a dum-de-dum. And I don't know how I've managed to get to the end of this dum-de-dum, not even mention the World Cup. But we managed to do that.
You've been very brave. World Cup, Formula One.
Well,
yeah, you've been very good. Can I talk about Strictly then?
But I haven't talked about the World Cup.
No, so I can't talk about Strictly.
No, I'm just saying, and I haven't spoken about it. We were about, and then he says, so can you then talk about Strictly? I haven't spoken about the World Cup.
Goalkeeper comes, it's popped in the air. Al-Sheib is lost in space. The ball's bobbling around. The overhead kick of the opening goal! Enter Valencia, Ecuador's all-time leading scorer, has put the visitors in front.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.